Welcome to the Second in Command podcast, produced by the COO Alliance and brought to you by its founder, Cameron Harold. In the Second in Command podcast, we talk to top COOs who share the insights, strategies, and tactics that made them the chief behind the chief. And now, here's your host, Cameron Harold.
With over 13 years of experience as a financial advisor, Andrew has expertise in comprehensive financial planning services to help clients thoughtfully pursue their goals. He also plays a key role in Freedom Street Partners' recruiting and client experience efforts, ensuring they deliver on first-class service that fosters lasting relationships with the families and individuals they serve. Andrew serves as the Chief Operating Officer with a primary focus on advisor operations and recruiting. He works diligently to make sure that the current advisors have the tools and resources they need to run their practice, and he's constantly sharing the firm's story with advisors looking to retire or make a change. Formerly a teacher, Andrew sought a career change and moved into financial services that would enable him to continue his practice of helping and guiding others. He aims to not only provide sound advice to help clients, but for them to also understand why this advice is so important. Andrew was previously a financial advisor with Edward Jones, and while there, he also served as a recruiting leader, mentor, and coach for his team members. Andrew earned his bachelor's degree in recreation, sport, and wellness management from Christopher Newport University, and his mother taught him to surround yourself with good people and good things will happen. And so far, that's proven true. His love of educating and helping others has always been at the forefront of his professional life, both as a teacher and later as a financial advisor. And he's also one of our newest members of the COO Alliance. So Andrew, welcome to the Second in Command podcast.
Thanks, Cameron. I really appreciate you having me on. It's my honor to be here.
No, you're welcome. I'm just back from a 5.5 weeks vacation and sitting and reading something off of a laptop. I haven't got my brain back. It feels like that was good. I got it in one take.
You look well rested. That's all that matters. You're good.
Very well rested. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how you got kind of started in your career and kind of where your experiences come from. And I'm also even curious a little bit. I'd like to know just even a little bit about the sport and wellness management and what you learned from that part of your career as well.
Yeah, my career track is not the typical track for somebody who is in the field that I'm in. You could tell maybe just from that bio. I started off as a high school teacher, and I taught health, driver's ed, physical education. I coached three sports. I played baseball in college and wanted to be a baseball coach. That was my passion. And teaching was the easiest avenue to get to that passion. And after about 5 years in the education field and leaving my home at 6 a.m. and not getting home until 8 o'clock at night, making around $40,000 a year and having a young son at home that I barely saw awake, I knew I needed a career change. And so coaching translated well to this profession. You know, as a coach, you're constantly trying to mentor your athletes and help them accomplish their goals, help them get the most out of their potential. And financial planning was not all that different from that. It wasn't all that different from teaching. I still feel very at home on my whiteboard explaining things to clients and also explaining our story to other advisors and advisors that are looking to get out of the business. So it was a smooth transition, but I look at every experience as a building block. Teaching prepared me for this career. It gave me the skill set to talk to people, to educate, and to help clients accomplish their goals and do what they're looking to do with our assistance.
So I actually had written down the words coaching and teaching to dive into, and I'm glad you kind of mentioned both of those so seriously as well. So before we even kind of dive into talking about Freedom Street Partners, I want to find out a little bit more about your methodologies in coaching and some of what you maybe learned from coaching in baseball what you bring into the coaching practice and coaching employees. So talk to us a little bit about coaching and some of the methodologies.
You know, one of the things I think that that coaching taught me is that everybody responds differently to how you deliver information. The phraseology that I used to say, and I think it's still okay to say it, is, you know, some players you need to kick in the butt and other players you would pat on the butt. And meaning that, you know, some players don't respond well if you try to jump on them and be very critical. But then there were other players that needed that. They needed that that direction. They needed a little bit more of a firm voice that let them know that they weren't on track. And so what I took from that with what we do is personalities. You know, we actually do DISC assessments for some of our top level clients. We want to know how they think. We want to know how they respond to information so that we can deliver it the best way possible. So we almost took some of that coaching acumen and tried to put some science behind it. And I think it served us well. It's showed that we don't just care about clients' money. We care about them. We care about their personality. We care about who they are as people. And in an industry where it's very difficult to set yourself apart because we're very commoditized, unfortunately, I feel like that's one of the things that we've taken to heart and what I do personally to interact with clients that way.
That's cool. Yeah, it's interesting. I think that coaching is actually the number one skill that a leadership team needs to have over all the other soft skills and executive functioning. I think coaching is really, because our job as leaders is to get results through people. And the only way to do that is to coach them. So then talk about teaching. And I'd love to know kind of what you learned from teaching kids in high school and what applies kind of in teaching adults and teaching in the, you know, in the companies, because there's got to be some lessons there for sure.
Well, the first thing that I loved about transitioning to this career was I was actually able to teach and only worry about the teaching aspect. I don't have to discipline any of my clients. So I don't have to refer my clients to the principal's office and definitely didn't have to write them up or chastise them in any way. But from an education standpoint, I think a lot of advisors in our industry, they focus on just telling their clients what to do. And as a teacher, if I just told my students what to know without really kind of giving them the why and giving them the background and building them from step A to step B to step C, instead of just saying, all right, here's where we're starting and here's where we're landing, I think it probably gives the teaching industry a disservice. And so we focus on helping our clients understand why we're doing what we're doing and not just saying, hey, we're smarter than you. You need to do what we say. There's a ton of people in our business that will do that. You can find five of them on every corner. But taking the time to give the why, I think, is definitely a foundational principle that we focus on.
Yeah, I learned something years ago in teaching, and it was that the student controls the learning environment. And if the student's not ready to learn, they won't learn. It doesn't matter how good the teacher is. So you need to kind of get them excited. At least in the financial side, I guess your clients want to learn. But how do you take some of those teaching principles and coaching principles with your employees then internally?
So for me, Cameron, that started with my previous employer. I spent a lot of time training advisors and really teaching them how to do the job, and not just the numbers, but, you know, asking the right questions and asking open-ended questions where instead of getting a yes or a no, you're engaging the client to respond and really give you something and give you something about what they're thinking and where their thought process is. So I think that was important. And then, you know, from a team perspective, I think, you know, number one, as a teacher, I always got a lot from my students almost as much, and my players as much as I gave. And I think as a team, even though, yes, we're all teaching, we're all trying to get everybody trained on our systems and our platforms and everything that we use, we're always constantly finding ways to get better and learning. We call it fail forward a little bit as a startup. As you well know, you know, you're going to fail forward and you're going to learn from mistakes, but we've been able to do that really well. And I think our team appreciates that approach. I really do.
And do you take that concept of team from sports into the business world as well then?
Very much. Better together. That's a mantra that we espouse quite a bit. You know, maybe we stole it from Jack Johnson. I don't know. But I think at the end of the day, understanding strengths, playing to strengths of the team and checking egos at the door and making sure that it's okay to be blunt. It's okay to be bluntly honest, especially when you're in a leadership team meeting. You know, our CEO is not worried about hurting my feelings by, you know, letting me know something that he feels like isn't my best lane, and vice versa. you know, one thing I have learned as a COO is that, you know, when you're giving feedback to the CEO, there's a right time and a right place to give that and make sure that you're doing it in the right avenue and doing it in the right setting. But our leadership team in general is very open. It's like a good Italian family. You're gonna tell it like it is, and everybody's gonna be okay with that.
And do you guys use the family analogy or the team analogy more?
I would say team for sure. I think even though we are like family because we've kind of grown up in the business together, at least our partners have. I think that from a team perspective, we all work together really well in that way. And everybody has roles. Everybody, I think we're in our proper lanes, which took a little while. You know, one of the growing pains that we had was everybody was trying to do a little bit of everything. And we were really busy, but there's a difference between being busy and being efficient. And we've really improved over the last 3 years with efficiency. I think that's cool.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to a friend, another CEO, about this recently, and we were saying that we don't want to use the term family in business anymore because some people had dysfunctional families growing up and rough families growing up. And it's true. I was like, oh God, you're right. I didn't even think about it because I had that kind of leave it to Beaver family, right? And it's like, Yeah, we're family. We do vacations. And I have people like, I never went on vacation. And I hated my mom and my dad. It was crazy.
Well, look, as athletes, we were all on some bad teams at some point too.
but it's different with a team, right? Because team members can be replaced and you got to recruit them. Yep. You're like always up leveling. I like the team analogy a lot more. Who's the CEO of Freedom Street Partners?
So our CEO is Scott Danner. Yep. Scott's our visionary. Scott has done a great job of leading from the front and definitely sets our course. Nobody works harder than Scott. I do my best to keep up with him, but he just has a passion for this business that is really tough to replicate. And he's more than a CEO for me. You know, he's like a brother. We really grew up in the business together at Edward Jones. And you know, we make each other better, and I'm proud to be on the team with him. He's been a great leader for our group.
And you know, you touched on something saying that Scott as the CEO is really the controls the vision and is that forward thinking, that passion that he's always transferring. How did you get on the same page and how long have you been with Freedom Street Partners?
So Freedom Street Partners started in July of 16 and I joined literally about 3 months afterwards. Okay. So I started in November of 16 and I'll be honest, Cameron, you know, that first 9 to 12 months in our industry, when you leave your previous firm and you're coming to a new destination, you know, your focus isn't on the team. Your focus is really about, you know, announcing to your clients that you've made a move and then answering their questions and hoping that they ask if it's okay for them to come with you. And so you're spending a lot of time just kind of rebuilding and making sure that your business, your individual business is in good order.
Sure.
And going through that process is so important because any advisor that joins us has to go through some semblance of that process before they get their feet back under them and land. And it's actually more common now than it ever has been. Advisors are more willing to move than they ever have been. They're looking for options. They want to make sure that they have the best deliverables for their clients and also a good deal for them.
It seems to be a much more entrepreneurial industry than it was 20 years ago.
Well, you know, our business model is almost built on that statement. Independence in this industry used to be very scary. Everybody worked for a broker dealer who was an employer and you were an employee. They handled all the back office stuff and you were the face. You just met with the clients and you were more of a client relationship manager, but you didn't own the business. The corporation owned the business and they compensated you to take care of the clients. Well, we built out a platform and took time to build out the infrastructure. We call it independence with support. So if an advisor wants to become an independent advisor and own their business, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they had to find healthcare. They had to find compliance. They had to go and get additional licenses, which is, you know, for some advisors, especially if you're a veteran, you're not interested in taking a test and sitting for more exams. They don't have solutions for investment management. So we took the time to build out all of those pieces so that somebody could become an independent and then plug into our resources. And so far we've been able to execute on that, and it's been very successful.
That's cool. All right. So how did you, and how do you stay on the same page as Scott with his vision of where he wants to take the company? How do you stay on the same page with vision? And then how do you keep him on the same page with where and how you want to make it come true, like with your plans?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think my first response, Cameron, would be, we meet regularly. You know, Traction, EOS Traction has been very important for us over the past year. We've started to be much more consistent with that implementation. So we do have a weekly meeting every Monday that really starts to set the course for that particular week. We do have quarterly offsites where we can dive deeper into what's going on and what are some of the things that we need to keep on our radar. And then Scott and I just have a good working relationship. You know, sometimes when you have a really good functional team, your best ideas and the best communication and the best interaction are those, you know, you're at the beach on a Saturday afternoon with family and you're just sitting next to one another and you're able to actually just do a brain dump and get back on the same page if there was some things that were kind of lurking and that may have fallen through the cracks. So a combination of all those things, but consistency has been key because communication was a challenge early. We were in two separate locations initially and trying to be on the same page when you're not right next door to one another at all times was a challenge early on. Now I spend some time in both offices, which has been a very good move and helps us stay in touch.
Yeah. What else did you do to fix the communication challenges then?
We found some electronic avenues, to be able to communicate with one another. I'll be honest with you. Some of the best information that we exchange is at 9:30 at night where we're literally typing it into an app and checking out information and sharing it with everybody on the team. And then getting immediate feedback. And then that way we can look at those things. And then when we're back face to face, we can recap and we can kind of figure out what's the best course of action going forward. So that's been very important as well.
I love it.
Everybody's tired of talking through email. Our email boxes are starting to thin out a little bit, which is actually great. It's been very liberating.
Yeah, email is terrible for communication. All right, so feedback. You talked about earlier about giving feedback to the CEO, and sometimes it's not easy. So how do you deliver that tough feedback? And give us an example maybe of some tough feedback you've had to give.
I think one of the challenges just trying to be an independent mind and looking at things from a 40,000-foot view is when you're the CEO of a company, you're trying to literally think of everything all the time and you're always on. And sometimes I think that vision continues to, it's always forward looking and it's always looking for the next roadblock or the next hurdle or the next challenge. And sometimes the execution is difficult to keep up. We're still solving problems A, B, and C, and he's already five steps ahead. And that's more of an advantage than it is a disadvantage. We would not be as good a company if it wasn't for that. But for me, making sure that I, on the side, have that conversation with him, not in a meeting. I don't think it's appropriate to call out your CEO in a leadership team meeting and say, hey, you need to slow down, or, you know, we haven't even fixed the first two issues before we go into issue 4 and 5. But just making sure that he stays grounded and keeps some perspective. And plus, he needs to know how the morale and the mindset of staff and where they stand with everything that's being with everything that they're responsible for, and making sure that they're on the same page and that they feel good about their value and what they're having to accomplish. So I think, you know, without being too specific, I just think it's so important to respect the role of the CEO. And making sure that everybody always sees that I have his back, because at the end of the day, you can't rely on your quote unquote right hand man or right hand person if you don't know 100% of the time that they're on the same page with you.
Yep. When, and it's interesting you talked about the feedback and doing it, almost doing it privately versus publicly. It's the same as with any of your key employees, but the CEOs really want us to give them the hard feedback, but they want it privately because our job is to make them iconic.
Yeah.
And if we do it in front of everybody else, it tears them down. It doesn't do anything, but they actually want us to tell them the bad stuff and the critical or the, right. Yeah, any of the uncomfortable stuff that nobody else really does. So you mentioned quarterly offsites. How do you run those and what are they like?
So we actually have a location of, we have a building that has a huge room that we own, but we don't operate out of per se. We actually run some events out of that particular building, and it's just a great spot. We've got easels, we've got a huge TV, we've got all the technology that we would need to put numbers up. But we tend to just, those tend to be pretty low key. There is a set agenda, but it's very informal. I think it provides a platform to where the team can be a little bit more outspoken. They can be, blunt's not necessarily the right word. I use that probably too often, but they can just speak with candor and go into much more detail. I think those quarterly offsites give us the ability to not feel rushed. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a hour-long meeting where I felt like there were still things hanging out there that if we just had a little bit more time. And so those quarterly offsites have been just very instrumental in doing those. When we first started the company, we started to have some, we had some 6 to 8 hour planning meetings, and that was the impetus of, where we are today. And if we didn't have those meetings, we wouldn't have had a lot of the great ideas that we came up with to how to get this thing started and grow it as fast as we have.
Oh, for sure. Now, what other meeting rhythms do you have in place?
We do an annual meeting, which includes all of our entire company. So we do what I call regional meetings. So that's where we actually share our vision with everybody that's a part of our company so they can see. We also recognize, we highlight, the folks within our business who are doing well, who are excelling, they're bringing in business, they're growing their practice. And so we definitely want to recognize folks when they do that. And then we're actually fortunate. Our parent company, our affiliate broker-dealer, Raymond James, provides a national conference each year that is second to none. And that gives us an ability to take our group to Las Vegas, to Orlando, to Washington, D.C., to some different places throughout the country and spend some time with them and break bread and celebrate them out of town and give them an opportunity to kind of almost take a little mini break, which has been very good.
That's cool. You also talked about EOS Traction. So when did you guys start using Traction? What do you like about it?
So I love EOS Traction. We started after I attended our first COO Alliance meeting. It's probably one of the best values that I got from that particular meeting in Arizona. There was another COO who was there who had been implementing it for some time, and they were just talking about it, and I said, I need to see this. I need this book. I need to read it. I need to understand what in the heck you're doing, because it's solving all the problems that I see that we have that we need to try to fix just from a communication standpoint and finding a rhythm to what we do. And so that's been good. We still have a couple pieces to go. The scorecard has been very important, and it's something that we have needed to get a hold of for a long time, and we're really starting to wrap our arms around that, which is great. And just the concept of, if I was on a deserted island and I could only have 8 to 10 pieces of data to understand whether or not my business was doing well or not, it was so simple but so effective, and it really kind of made us look at our business a little differently, which was good.
And it'll take you time to put each of those systems in place too, right? So don't get discouraged that it takes usually, a year to 2 years to have the systems, and then 2 to 3 years to have them deeply ingrained and just happening on autopilot too.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of change. So talk about growing your team. And how many, tell us a little bit about Freedom Street Partners. So how many employees have you got? What markets do you operate in?
Sure. So we started obviously with just three advisors and a couple of support staff when we first began. We now have a total of 12 advisors, and I believe we have a total of 8 support staff. Now, keep in mind, all of our advisors, they run their own independent LLCs. They're just affiliated with us. So they're not employees of our company, but they are just a part of our group, which is very advantageous to us. We like having being able to not have to deal with their payroll and some of the things that they have to take care of internally. We've grown from $180 million of assets under management to just under $700 million in the course of about 2 years, 2.5 years. And we're right at just under $6 million of revenue on a trailing 12. So we're growing very fast, which is awesome and scary all at the same time. But I think we're very grounded. We took our time in year one building out the infrastructure instead of just growing as fast as humanly possible and taking on anyone and everyone. We've grown the right way. We haven't added a single advisor that we haven't been tickled to death that they're a part of our group a year later, 2 years later. I think that's important. There's been no buyer's remorse. There's really three ways, Cameron, that people work with us. Either affiliates, which affiliates are people, you know, maybe they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s. They're not going to retire anytime soon from this business, but they just know that they need more and they want to own their business. They're tired of being an employee somewhere else and they want to own their practice, but they want to do it with some support. So that's one way that people work with us. Number two is succession. So think of the advisor who doesn't want to leave tomorrow, but knows that they're close, maybe 3, 5, 7 years from now, they want to get out of the business, but they want to do it on their terms and on their time schedule. So we work with those advisors as well to have a built-in succession plan for their practice. And then lastly is acquisitions. So the advisor that has hit the last chapter and they're ready to go within the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, and they want to phase out fairly quickly and they want to sell their practice. And so those are really the three main groups of advisors that we look to work with. And then everything we do, Cameron, revolves around the end client. So every process, every platform, all of our investment management, it revolves around how do we deliver an ideal client experience to the end client, to the folks that we're actually serving on a day-to-day basis. And so I think not getting lost, not letting that get lost on us has been very important, and making sure that we keep that in mind with every decision that we make.
And you guys are in a really competitive industry, and that, very competitive industry. Most of the clients are sitting with advisors they've often been with for years. I think I've been with my financial advisor for 10. We don't really change that often. And how do you differentiate yourself from the rest of the competition out there? And how do you differentiate yourself?
It's the perfect question. And I think it's something that we work hard to achieve every day. And that is, we built out a process and we actually named it. And the name of our process is Life and Wealth Optimization. And if you think about it, just on its most basic premise, life comes before wealth in that title. And that was very intentional. So when clients come to see us, you know, the first questions we're asking of them are not how much money do you have and, you know, what kind of investments do you own? It's, you know, what lights you up? What are you passionate about? What does the next chapter look like for you? What are you doing? And, you know, not in that hoity-toity, hey, we're going to write down all your dreams and goals type situation, because there are some firms that do preach some of that stuff. But really taking an interest in that particular individual, learning about their personality, looking about what's important to them, and then using that as a guide for how we navigate their financial future. So we don't want a relationship with their money. We want a relationship with them. And I think that's the only way you can really separate yourself in this industry anymore, because everybody's got good investment management. Everybody has relationships with the best mutual funds, and they have good research, and they can put together a solid investment platform for any of their clients. So beyond that, it's who really cares about me as a person? Who really cares about what happens with my money? Who cares whether I'm able to buy that dream house or whether I'm able to buy that boat or go on that vacation that has been my dream trip to Europe or whatever it is? So I think that's really the premise of how we've separated ourselves. And then creating a client experience that's scalable, repeatable, and manageable for any of the advisors that tap into our resources. So there's a lot of advisors who've been letting their business run them. You know, their phone constantly rings off the hook. If the market is down, they're constantly, you know, having to answer tons of questions that their clients are scared and they don't know what's going on. We've really tried to be proactive and build out our client experience in a way where our phone doesn't ring much. And the reason is because we have a pre-scheduled call with them and they know exactly when it's going to be, how often it's going to be, because it's at their convenience and when they want it to happen. If it's monthly, great. If it's quarterly, we'll do it. If it's only twice a year because they don't want to talk to us that much.
So we're going to come into another market correction. I mean, the market's correct. So what do you guys do to kind of deal with that stress when your customers have that kind of a stress? Because I think we all, in every business, we have times when our customers are stressed out. But I think when the money's involved, it's particularly stressful. What do you guys do to deal with that?
Yeah. One of the main things that we've always done has been event driven. So we do monthly town halls in all of our locations. And when I say town hall, I want you to envision that we rent out a room and we're not in there giving a dog and pony show about the latest, greatest investment. You know, we'll start off and we'll talk about, you know, the backdrop of what's going on in the universe with the economy. We'll give some of the information that are coming from our chief market strategists because, you know what, they're very smart. They have a lot more letters after their name than I do, so I'm always going to share that information. But more importantly, we actually talk about the emotional side of investing. The worst investment decisions that are made are almost always made on emotion and not on logic. Mm-hmm. I know everybody has heard the old adage that Warren Buffett has used for years, which is buy low and sell high. And or be greedy when others are fearful and be fearful when others are greedy. But human emotion does not do that. When everybody's scared, everybody gets scared with them and they're selling at the worst possible time. So the other thing we do is we have some principles that we believe in. And number one is don't own an investment today that you wouldn't want to own in a recession tomorrow. You know, really think about the business model of that particular investment and whether or not you would be nervous about it if the economy started to struggle. And so we think there's things like that that you want to make sure that you're factoring in when you're making investment decisions.
That's interesting. I like that. I can't wait for the market to have this next big correction because I've been building up cash recently waiting to kind of buy back in. So
absolutely.
I know you can't time the market, but I made a pile of money in 2008 and 2009 when everybody was panicking and puking in the streets. And I'm like, fucking load her up, baby. I bought eight stocks and load. I was up 107% year over year. It was great. What do you think you learned in this industry that is helpful for people in other businesses, other industries?
Wow. I think in a service business, Cameron, and I think you probably agree with this, being able to relate to the end client and being able to serve them in a way where they know that you care about them as people and not just about the next sale and not about the next transaction. I think developing long-term relationships, developing generational relationships. You know, we have clients who are older, but we know who their kids are. Their kids are probably clients of ours. And if it's not their kids, then it's their grandchildren. And taking a vested interest in the people. You know, it was in my bio. If you surround yourself with good people, good things will happen. I've always believed that. That's something that was instilled in me a long time ago. But at the end of the day, if we can show empathy, and you know what makes us different is, you know, we show up for the retirement party or we're hosting it. We show up at the funeral. You know, we are more than just a financial planner or a financial advisor. And I think that can carry through to any business. People know if you're genuine.
People
can read whether you really care or whether you just talk really well about what you do. And so we don't lip service doesn't do any good for anybody. And so we want to make sure that our actions are always aligned with our words. And if you can do that in whatever business you're running, whether it's your employees or whether it's your clients, your culture will be second to none and nobody will ever leave you.
Talk to me about advisors. Again, the kind of the war on talent, and you're again in a very competitive industry. Why do you think the advisors join you? What is it that you do on the recruiting side to bring them over? And to not scare them away when you're interviewing them.
Yeah. Almost all of the advisors that we're talking to, at some point they've known that they were different and that they weren't in the right place. And I think what they're scared of is they want to own the business, but they don't want to own all of the headaches that come with owning a business. Mm. And so I think what's good, what's so easy to tell about our story is, you know, you could go independent and just be your own person. Don't even affiliate with us. Just go be your own guy or gal. But you're going to take on 100% of all those headaches and those responsibilities. With our platform, you're going to be paid exactly the same way as if you were by yourself on your own on that island, but you get all the resources that we've built out and what we provide. And so that's been an easy story to tell. And I think if you almost have to not like us to not want to join with us if you're considering independence. But the other thing I think is, you know, we've all done what we're asking these advisors to do. We've made a change. We've gone through it and we've lived it. You know, from a teaching perspective, we all had the administrator who told us how we should teach, what we should teach, and what format we should teach it. And when you ask, well, when was the last time you were in a classroom? Oh, I was never in the classroom. Well, it really takes away a lot of credibility from the administrator.
Yeah.
Not to say that there can't be some good administrators that weren't ever in the classroom, but 9 times out of 10, they're not. Well, we are the administrator who has been in the weeds, has been in the classroom, has done the teaching, has done the hard work. And so being able to share our experience with that and share mistakes that we made that we improved upon, you know, because we've already screwed it up. The fact that we're going to keep them from making those same mistakes, I think it's very comforting to the advisors that are considering making that change.
That's cool. It makes logical sense. All right, Andrew, if you were to look back at yourself at 21 years old and you were to give yourself some advice, stuff that you know today to be true, but you wish you'd known at 21, what do you think it would be?
I think I definitely would have, I would have pulled the trigger on starting in this business sooner.
Hmm.
I was this close to making that change at 22, 23. And didn't do it. So that 5-year period that I lost, there was a lot of growth during that 5 years that would have been exponentially different today. Number two, you know, I think we get so caught up in our education, our degree, you know, what we're doing, and that wedges us down a path that we have to follow and that we have to go with. I think at the end of the day, if something calls your name and something speaks to you and you feel like it's the right direction, it's okay to change course. It's okay to deviate from what you thought some predestined path was for you. So I think that would be, you know, follow your heart. I know that sounds very cliche, but I think at the end of the day, if you're not passionate about it, you're not going to be happy and you're not going to be able to be successful in whatever it is that you're doing. I still believe to this day, if they would pay me the same amount of money to be a baseball coach, I'd be on a bench somewhere doing it. But it doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That'll be my retirement job. So after I retire and sail off into the sunset, I'm gonna be an assistant college baseball coach somewhere, wherever it is.
I'll come watch your team. You've been smiling this whole podcast interview as well, so it's cool. You clearly love what you do. Yeah. Andrew Gregory, the Chief Operating Officer from Freedom Street Partners, thanks very much for sharing with us today.
Cameron, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you at the CEO Alliance event in September as well.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to it.
All right. See ya.
Yep. Have a good one.
You've been listening to Second in Command, brought to you by COO Alliance founder Cameron Harold. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe. For more best practices from industry-leading COOs, visit COOalliance.com.
The branch address for Freedom Street Partners is 516 Innovation Drive, Suite 205, Chesapeake, Virginia, 23321. And you can contact us by phone at 757-977-0998. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated. Freedom Street Partners is not a registered broker or dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services. Investing involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategies selected. COO Alliance and Cameron Harold are not affiliated with Raymond James.